Thank you for tuning in to the What's Your Take podcast. My name is Casey. I hope you'll enjoy just as much as I have learning from today's guest. Welcome to the What's Your Take podcast. I'm your host, Casey Yardley, and I'm sitting here with Daniel Forbes, or Dan Forbes as I call him. He was my roommate back in college when I went to Snow College. He was a recent graduate of Southern Utah University, right?
That's right.
And also, you graduated in chemistry, so you're a chemist, right?
I am.
Oh man, a smart guy in here. So obviously I am a little bit over my head, but we'll get going from here and we'll see really what we can discover about Dan. I guess a couple of things to go over and let me know if like this is correct or incorrect. You're a Utah native, right?
I am. I was raised in Highland, Utah.
In Highland. So like a stone's throw and a half from here, essentially.
Yeah, not far.
I like Highland. It's a good place. And then also, like I said, we were former roommates from Snow College, which I enjoyed. And we kind of talked about this earlier when we were kind of like catching up. It's been a minute since we've hung out, but like we had a pretty solid time as roommates. It was me, my cousin, you, Blake
Brindley, yeah.
Blake Brindley, Dan Faraday, and Jake Albison, right?
That's right.
So it was like, it was a good time and we always had parties.
It was so much fun. My favorite was the Monday Mugs of Glory.
Oh, yes.
So we had really fun traditions. It was a good time.
Yeah. Man, I haven't thought about Monday Mugs of Glory, but I had a huge mug. Like, it was a giant green mug.
Yeah.
I think I had that mug until just recently when we moved this last time. I'm pretty sure either I threw it away by accident or it broke because it was always with me and always kind of went with us wherever we went. And my wife was like, this is a hideous mug. I'm like, but I love this mug.
But there's so many memories with it.
Yeah, I made that mug at Color Me Mine, I think. Yeah. So it was like one of those things. It was like it had a good memory, multiple. And now like we're here and it's like a few years after we've been roommates and you're like recent graduate, like you have is it a master's degree or is it a bachelor's degree?
A bachelor's degree right now, and I'm about to start my MBA.
You're about to start your MBA. Mm-hmm. Oh, tight. So you're going on to the MBA life.
Yeah.
I support that in full. MBA is great. I don't have one yet, but it's on my list. And then also you are a husband, you have a wife, and you have some children.
Two kids.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Shout out to your wife for letting you come over, and shout out to the kids for being patient with you.
Oh, yeah. My son was really sad when I left, actually. It was a little depressing, so I was like, I'll be back.
And he's like, when?
Yeah, yeah, it was really sad, because he's like, Dad, I just want to go with you. So it was really sweet.
Well, he could probably have came over and ridden my dog around or something, right?
He would have loved it. He loves dogs.
We'll have to get him around, most definitely, because, yeah, my dog is like a child. It's overly spoiled, and it's fun to like introduce my friend's kids to the dog and the dog to the kids, and they're like weirdly like friend, and then they like play and like the kid like gets tired of the dog and the dog's like, but I have more energy, or vice versa, where the kid has more energy and the dog is just like, stop, I'm not in the mood right now, please leave me alone. So it's like funny how they work together. They're obviously not the same, but they're weirdly similar sometimes.
I agree. Actually, kids do the same thing with each other, too.
So. Which I don't know anything about. I just know that my friend's kid calls me and wants to go hang out, and I'm just always like, I'm working. I can't hang out. So, yeah, and you are currently employed over at IM Flash, which is a technology company, right?
That's right. Yeah, they make semiconductors or computer memory.
Computer memory, right. Uh-huh. It's like a very it's a niche market, right? Like, you guys have, like, a hold in it really well.
Yeah, so years ago, there were, like, 50 big companies that were doing it, and then they all went away until now it's like Samsung, Intel, and Micron. And so IM Flash is a venture company of Intel and Micron.
Things I don't know about, which I learned. And yeah, computers I'm like not familiar with. I'm gonna be super honest with you. I'm always like, oh yeah, this computer works, I can click buttons on it. But every time someone's like, oh yeah, this is what makes it work, like my eyes kind of glaze over and I'm like, yeah. I don't know what that means. So it's, yeah, so essentially you're making microprocessors is what you said, right?
Yeah, microchips.
Microchips, yeah. Okay. Okay, see, I messed up already. Microchips. That's cool. And then those go to power what we use, right, in everyday stuff.
Yeah, and we're the only ones in the world that make it right now. So, Lehigh, Utah, surprise.
Right here in Silicon Slopes.
That's right. So, yeah, we're the only ones in the world that make it right now. It's really, it's actually a really, really cool thing.
That is cool. I'm finding, and I would never be like, oh, yeah, I don't know anything about companies and technology, because that's like my weird hobby where I'm like, tell me about your business. What do you do? And I creepily interview people, hence why I'm podcasting and interviewing folks, right? But it's more like I'm curious about like what people do and how they're finding ways to, you know, just benefit the world and society, and whether it's a good benefit, like, oh yeah, like we're doing clean water and we're saving the orphans, I don't know, or like helping Flint, Michigan, clean water, that's my idea, Flint, Michigan. Or if you're like, oh yeah, I'm pushing consumer materials, which I tend to do like in my job, where it's like, oh yeah, I'm pushing lots of consumer materials. And so I don't know, it's always interesting to see what people do and the reasons why. And so I think it's cool that you're like a part of a company that's an actual maker of a product, because not many people, especially in the United States anymore, can say I'm a maker, because we're not very much we're a service economy, not so much like a making economy, right?
That's something that I've definitely always thought was really important. Even, you know, several years ago, I was thinking a lot about what we have, and I realized that all the successful people I heard about were usually some sort of influencer on social media, or they made music, or it's all information that they processed. Mm-hmm. But I have always felt like it's so important to get down and actually make a physical product, because I think that that's the only thing that can really last, you know?
Yeah. A physical product that people can hold, it's tangible, and like, especially I would assume like you guys sell these parts and like, go on to, you know, like I said, being in computers, being in everyday items,
and cars, yeah,
and cars,
lots of stuff,
yeah, things people use, and people don't really think about it. Like a lot of times, like there's a lot of businesses and industries that we don't really think about. Like I'll be honest with you, like I never think about the plumber until I need him, and then I'm so grateful that he has that skill set and everything like that. But then where we live today in such like a technology driven world, right? You don't worry about what your computer is doing or what your computer, you know, can do until there's a problem, and then you're like, why is this broken? What's going on? And that could be the computer in your car that controls the blinker, right? Like any of those type of things. Like it's mm-hmm. it's all variant, and I don't even know if that's the right word to use. It all varies, right? That's probably the better word. What is available to us. Do you interact with folks very often, or are you like on like a small team that you just essentially, you guys are making, designing, and developing new products? How does that kind of work for you?
Well, the company culture is actually really cool, because everyone's really open and mm-hmm. they talk to each other a lot. There's a lot of communication. They even designed our workspace so that we could, you know, it's easier to see people's faces around you and everything. But for me, I usually stick with my smaller team, where we stick with one area, one process that we really focus on, trying to make sure everything runs smoothly.
Yeah.
So that's...
Do you guys focus in on like one type of product, or do you guys like work on many projects, or like how are your projects assigned, I guess, or divvied up?
Well, when you make a microchip, you have to have a lot of different layers mm-hmm. of stuff on it, you know? So you'll start with like a basic silicone wafer, and then you put stuff on it,
yeah.
To create the microchip. And so we focus on one specific type of layer that is added.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, we use different materials for the layers, but a specific process for adding layers. So there's some that you use with chemicals, there's others that you take away with other stuff, and so we're part of the adding and building up process.
That's pretty tight. So like essentially building these pieces is a lot like building a road. You like lay down a foundation, and everything is kind of built up onto it until the complete yeah. project, finished project, you might say, right?
Yeah, I would like to look at it like a skyscraper, honestly, because there's lots of, yeah, you'll have a bunch of layers, and then maybe you'll take some stuff off, and then you'll have some more layers, and then, yeah. And so it's a really interesting process, and I think it's really cool.
That's cool. I think it's cool. I'm really curious now. Like, I'm like, oh, we could just talk about this the whole time. I think you would enjoy it, and then people would be like, man, I came here to not learn about microchips today. No, but I think that's cool. Like, I think that things that are built, and I don't know, I'm not very good with working with my hands per se, because I'm a little short-handed in one side, but I always build things. I try to like tinker, but like seeing people who like build stuff and understanding that there is a very specific process in doing that is, it's cool. And you're like, oh yeah, I'm like, I work on one section of that and it's different. It's like, oh, I didn't realize that there was so much that goes into such a small piece, right?
Yeah, it takes a long time to make a wafer.
That's cool. I love that. That's a good segue into what's next, and I kind of think we'll lay into it. And it seems like based off of us talking, and the audience obviously can't see your facial expressions, but as we talk, you seem to be smiling a lot, and you're like very like, you're happy about what you're doing and you're talking about. So moving on forward, like what really brings you joy? Like what puts a smile on your face every day? How are you able to, you know, just talk and have a smile about what you're doing?
So this is a question I've had to think about a lot, because I have had a lot of hard things that I've gone through too, where maybe to other people it might not seem that bad, but over the last couple of years, something that has really been brought to my focus is what is most important to me, you know, kind of what is my purpose here.
Yeah.
And as I've come to that, I found that it is making connections with people.
Yeah.
You know, helping connect people with each other, and then me connecting with other people. Because that's something I found I've been really passionate about, especially with, I just took a management class in for the MBA.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that I really, really loved all of the case studies we did, and then talking to other people about that. And I found that my passion in this life really is just people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talking to people, getting to know them, hearing their stories, and being able to connect with them.
Yeah.
And that's something that has brought me a lot of joy. I actually, my wife will tease me, because if we don't go and hang out with people, and mostly with new people, if we don't go and hang out with different people at least like twice a month, I get a little stir crazy. I get a little antsy in my house. So
yeah.
So that's been something that's really brought me joy, just connecting with people. And I think that one of the most important and deep ways you can connect with someone is through a family.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of your greatest opportunities. I know that a lot of people don't have ideal families.
Yeah.
I was really fortunate to grow up in a pretty tight-knit family. But as I went through high school, I tried to spend as much time away from my family with my friends, right? Because I thought that was important. But I found, as I look back, my best memories are with my family.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm married and I have two kids, I get to start creating those memories with my family. And I felt that that has been the most powerful way I can connect with people.
Yeah. So being like a guy, like, I'm the same way. Like, I love people. Like, I'm excited about people. And I'm like, I'm really, what my dad calls it, a social butterfly. Like, I'm just like hanging out with everyone. And like I see someone who looks down, you know, or like isn't having a good day, I always like have like a little quirky joke that I'm like, it probably fell flat on his face, but I hope it made you giggle a little bit, like, you know, like bad timing, whatever. And so I can relate there, and especially like meeting new people, that's exciting for a lot of people. It gives them a little social anxiety, but once they dare to do it, it's kind of, I don't know, addictive or contagious. Like, you just want to continue to do so, and hopefully it reflects in where people get to know each other, right? I don't know if you've noticed that.
I think it's a little bit of an adrenaline rush, to be honest. Because everybody is afraid of being rejected.
Yeah.
I think that everyone's deepest fear is that they're not worthy to make those connections with other people. And when you have to go up and kind of out of the blue talk to someone that you don't know, that is one of the most terrifying things. But then when they open up and they can suddenly talk to you, it's like, wow. Wow, what a rush. That was so much fun. So
I love that. It makes a lot of sense, especially I have a colleague who I used to sit by, and very quiet, very shy, and it probably took us like, we probably sat by each other for 5 or 6 weeks before like we really like made comments, and I'm like, that's not me. I was so uncomfortable sitting by them in silence, and I was like, now we chat all the time, we don't even sit by each other anymore. So it's like one of those things. I want to go back a little bit and kind of like talk about it. You said being, you know, a teenager, and you're like, I spent time away from my family because, you know, hanging out with my friends was a cool thing type, I guess. Like, I don't want to paraphrase or misphrase you, right? But like, it was like I was out with my friends doing stuff, and then now some of my best memories looking back are with my family, and I can relate the same way. But looking forward, now you have kids, and, you know, how can I create those memories for my kids? What do you do in like your home and with, you know, your wife to create those memories? How do you create those memories?
A lot of it comes from planning. So my wife and I are pretty opposite.
Uh-huh.
My wife is very spontaneous. She grew up in a very fluid household.
Uh-huh.
My household was a lot more strict, and because of that, my mom was very good at planning itineraries. So whenever we went on a trip, we had a very big itinerary that we would do, and it was usually, it wasn't overbearing. There have been a couple trips that we've all come back just like a little grumpy with each other because there was too much to do. But I like to try to make that time and to plan extra moments with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I, like, the day before my day off, I'll go ahead and be like, hey, what do I want to do to make my son's day fun,
mm-hmm.
but that will also be fun for me?
Yeah.
right? Because I hate just being bored. I can't do it. It's depressing. So I'll think of two or three kind of bigger activities, I suppose, that might take an hour, maybe a couple hours. And then my wife is really good at kind of being on the fly.
Yeah.
And so she'll have ideas to fill in those, everything else. And I think it's okay to have downtime too, because in the downtime is when some of the most poignant memories will come.
Yeah.
Like with my family, on Sundays growing up, my brothers and I, and well, my, so I have, I'm number four or five,
uh-huh.
two sisters and two brothers. And my, we would play Monopoly together or Risk. And my oldest sister didn't play Risk as much. She uh-huh. didn't like that as much, but we would play these games on Sundays, and because it was kind of a downtime because we didn't plan big things for Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that. Those are some of my favorite memories, you know. And so the downtime is really important to remember to just enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part is to plan fun activities. And they don't have to be big.
Yeah.
Like one is take my son for a bike ride, you know, or go to a little swimming pool. You'll find that as those little activities build up, the big activities will be really great, but they'll always look back on the little planned activities that you had.
Yeah. No, that's cool. I like that. I like kind of the thought there of, like, downtime is good. And I think a lot of people have a hard time with downtime because, kind of like you said, like, if I'm meeting new people, I go stir crazy. And a lot of people, for them, it's like if I'm not going out doing something, I get a little stir crazy. And that's me. I would, like, if I'm not going to see or hang out with people and I'm not going hiking, it's not just me that goes stir crazy. It's like my wife gets crazy because I'm stir crazy. I'm like, oh, what can we go do? I've been inside all day.
Yeah.
I'm probably like a little kid there where it's like, are we doing something? I'm bored. Let's go, you know? Probably that way that you've seen with your son probably at times. He's like, hey. I don't know.
You were like that in college too. We could never be stuck inside the apartment for too long.
I haven't changed. If I shaved this face, you would see the exact same face you saw in college. Just a few more scars, you know, but it works. I think that's really good to kind of like know, is that you've had that like training imbalance, and that kind of thought has kind of went through, because like you're like, hey, I plan a couple of things and then my wife is able to come in and we kind of create things as we go. And that seems like it's a very good way of like finding balance and being collaborative in what you do. And that probably like stems back also to your relationship and the way that you and your wife like work together, and not only like raising a child, but in other ways of your marriage and stuff. I think that's cool. What relationship advice do you have for people who are like, how can I like work towards like having a really, I can only think of the Filipino word here right now, like magkasundo, which is like a flowing together relationship, you know, like how do you go together? That's the word.
That's a really good question. I think a lot of it comes with being able to be open and vulnerable with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I like a lot of what Brené Brown talks about, and she talks about being able to bring down your walls, and she kind of talks about, I don't know, that having negative emotions, air quotation, negative emotions,
yeah,
is okay. Like, it's okay to feel mad and stuff. And so if you can be open and vulnerable with your spouse, it will increase your closeness, I guess, how close together you are, and it will also help you be able to understand how the other person thinks a lot better.
Yeah.
My philosophy on marriage is, marriage is like dishes.
Okay.
Let me explain.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing to say.
I haven't heard this one before.
So dishes have a lot of potential, right? So if you think you have like we have a set of yellow plates,
yeah,
right, that my wife likes. And so we'll have those yellow plates, and they can be empty,
mm-hmm,
or they can be full of food. And in the process of making and eating this delicious food and having a really full relationship, right? The dishes will get dirty, and so you need to work to clean it off,
yeah,
right? So you have to go do the dishes.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of the hard stuff, because marriage is not easy, and it's not perfect, and you eat for, what, like half an hour, and then it takes like a week to do the dishes sometimes.
They gotta soak, right? That's what sometimes happens. Like,
right.
I'm like, I'm gonna just soak these dishes, Alan. She's like, gives me that look like, are you sure you're gonna soak them, or are you gonna just leave them there for someone else to do it?
7 to 10 business days later, I'll take care of them.
Exactly.
But once they're clean, mm-hmm, you look at all the dirty dishes, and then you you put in the effort to work on the getting the dirt out, right? To work on getting the kinks out. And once they're clean, you look at your sink and counter and you're like, man, this is nice. This is beautiful. And it's a really fulfilling feeling.
Yeah.
And then you can reuse your dishes and refill them. And so that's kind of like a weird analogy, but that's how I view it. Cause they have the potential to be full of goodness, but it also takes a lot of work to maintain it.
I love that. I'll be honest with you. I hadn't thought about it like that. And I'm a huge food guy. I don't know if like you follow me on Instagram, but I like post food way too often on Instagram. I'm just like, man, look at this food I made. Look at this food I'm eating. Look at this food I might want to eat. I'll go to the grocery store. Look at this frozen food, like everything about food. So I love that. I agree with you. Marriage is a lot of work, and a lot of people get into relationships and they don't recognize that it's a two-way street, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not just a one-way street where, you know, it's not like going down to like, you know, what is that, 600 as you pull in and you're like, oh, we're all going the same way. It's more like going down State Street where there's traffic on both sides, and there are times when you might be going a little faster than another person, but they also, you know, you have to be patient. Also, sometimes you got to do a U-turn and kind of connect back together. And so
just gotta be making sure you're heading towards the same destination.
Yeah, the destination is important. It's key. Like, I could never probably make it as far as I have without, you know, like my wife like centering me and being like, hey, like really think about this. Is this something that's important? And like you talked about that vulnerability thing, and I think that's something not enough people are willing to be, right? It's scary to be like, oh, by the way, like this is like something I'm afraid of personally, or this is something that bothers me. Like, you never want to irritate or agitate the other person, right? It's hard to be like, this is gonna upset you, and I know it's gonna upset you, but something is bothering me. And it's kind of a weird thing to dare to talk about sometimes.
Yeah. Well, John Gottman, he is I guess the best word I can think of is like a sociologist.
Mm-hmm.
Don't quote me on that, because that may or may not be true. But John Gottman, he is a scientist that can predict with a 90% accuracy whether a couple will end up happy together or end up getting divorced.
Whoa.
With 90% accuracy after watching, I think, 15 minutes of video of them. And the big part of it was how the husband and wife, or how the spouses deal with conflict. And he says that they're four horsemen of the apocalypse. That's what he calls them. And you've got to be careful of them, because there's contempt, there's criticism, there's defensiveness, and stonewalling. And so I really, really recommend all of his works, because I've read them and I've felt like they've really, really helped.
Yeah.
But as long as you are able to avoid those four main ones, you'll be able to, or overcome those four horsemen, you will be able to have a happy marriage, because you'll be open to each other. And that's actually a really important thing. So I really recommend John Gottman's and Brené Brown's works. I love what they say.
I think I've listened to a little more Brené Brown. I've never heard of John Gottman personally. Brené Brown, she has like a Netflix show, right? Like just like a Netflix series that she just did.
She might. I don't know.
And I've read she had a book. So I listened to a podcast called The School of Greatness a lot, and it's kind of like similar to what I don't obviously hope to become Lewis Howes, and but I like I'm like, oh yeah, this vision is great, and I can see the same thing, but I want to do it with like, you know, people who I know, and but also expand that network of colleagues and stuff like that,
right?
And see what can happen. But he kind of talks about, he's had, you know, Brené Brown on, he's had different people who, it's like, you know, relationships are so essential to who we are as people, right? Because I'm obviously defined by my own, like I have my own personality, I have my own things I like and dislike, but when I get into a relationship, right, like you have your individualness, but you bring it up and it's kind of like knitting or weaving, right? You're bringing strands together and you make it work. And so I can imagine, like, for instance, having some of those horsemen, sorry, I forgot like the specifics, but those could probably cause, like, it's just like pulling a string out and there's like a hole in what you're creating, the textile, right? So it's, you can see there's a flaw, and it might not always be apparent to you right off the bat, but it grows and eventually like it causes a weak point and could probably just split it. I don't know. Maybe that's a bad thought.
I totally agree. I mean, another way to look at it is when you do stuff like that, it's a withdrawal on your bank account of relationship, of love.
Yeah.
Right? So you do little things to deposit, like you'll do, you'll speak in your wife's love language, and you'll do the dishes, or you'll tell her nice things and stuff. But when you do those extra things, it's a withdrawal on that. Yeah. And so you can only do so many withdrawals. That's kind of that philosophy.
I like that. So. I should probably get my wife some flowers or something. It's been a while. I'll be honest with you. I'm like bad. I'm like, they're going to die soon, so I'm not going to get them. But it makes sense. And I think, yeah, like you have to put in, you know, to pull out. Like they're, because obviously we're all going to let each other down from time to time. Like people do that naturally.
Oh, yeah.
But I think if you build it up so that person knows, like, even though you've let me down a little bit, like there's still that relationship, there's still that foundation, and you're able to kind of go forward. And I love that. I think about relationships a lot because I'm one of those people who, I don't know if I'm overly, personally, like overly self-conscious about things. Like if I do something like that could have been perceived as like rude or like maybe like out of without thought, like I've said comments been like, oh, you didn't notice that we've been doing that for a month that way, or
right.
You know, like what happens. And I like think about that and I dwell on that. Like it's a negative attribute for sure sometimes, but it's like one of those things where I work on like not being overly conscious of it, but like going to the person and be like, hey, this happened earlier, I feel bad about it, I don't know if you've remembered it, but I just want to clear my conscience about it and go forward. I went on a tangent there, so I don't know how I got here, to be honest with you. But no, thank you for sharing it. I really appreciate that. And especially, I think that a lot of people, like, they want to have good relationships and that quality of relationships you've kind of been describing. But we haven't, not everyone has seen a good relationship. And to be honest with you, it's very rare to see, like, an easily flowing relationship. And I'm not saying, like, oh, yeah, like, Dan, you and your wife, you know, you guys are the perfect foundation, because I don't assume that you guys have perfection in your marriage, or, you know, you guys would be
we're pretty awesome
in a glass castle, but you guys have great stuff, right? I'm not like, you're like, no.
Right, yeah.
But like everyone has their hard times. But what would you say, like, to someone who hasn't seen a good relationship, that doesn't really understand how to be that person who deposits the goodness into someone's, you know, emotional bank account or that love bank account? Like, how can someone do that when they don't understand it?
I think the first place to not look is social media.
Mm-hmm.
That place is a little too dangerous, mm-hmm. because people always post things about their relationship. I've personally known several people that have been posting a lot of things about how awesome their spouse is,
mm-hmm.
and then like 2 months later they got divorced because things were not going as well as they wanted people to think it was.
Yeah.
So it was a big surprise. So I strongly recommend never go to social media to see if you want to live like someone does, because that's not what they're showing.
Wait, so are you saying, like, talking about, have you seen those posts about, like, Instagram husbands, like, who are, like, behind their wives, like, taking, like, these perfect photos? And, like, vice versa, there's Instagram wives for husbands. Like, Allie takes a lot of my Instagram photos, and I'm like, catch me jumping in the air, right? And, like, she does that, and so vice versa. Like, you try to post these, like, perfect picturesque moments, and you're like, I was so happy that day, when really it was the 33 seconds that you took the photo happy, and the other 20 some odd hours of life you were like just mad or grumpy or like unhappy.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. And I'm also saying it's okay to feel that way.
Yeah.
You'll see these people that seem always really, really happy. That's not the case. They have regular emotions just like everyone else. What I would say to someone who is looking for a place to look for a good relationship, first off, my parents. As far as I know, my parents have the best marriage ever. They're really, really cool. But if you cannot find my parents, I would recommend, honestly, going to parks and just kind of people watching.
Mm-hmm.
It's not creepy to go, you know, hang out at a park with someone and just people watch.
Yeah.
No one's going to think anything. Go to parks and look for old people.
Mm-hmm.
I think old couples are some of the best people to go look at and to ask, because they have had a lot of that life experience. And if they still love each other after like 45 years of marriage,
mm-hmm.
they've learned a lot.
Yeah.
They've learned the basics that you need. And so I think if you want to go look, find out what a good relationship looks like, go people watching, see some old people. And even if you have a little social anxiety, go up and ask them just a really quick question. Just be like, hey, you guys seem happy. What did you do to stay married? And there are all sorts of different things that they have in life, but I found that because they have a lot more experience, they always have really great techniques and answers.
Yeah. That's a really smart thing to do. I people watch all the time where I'm like, oh yeah, those guys, you can tell they're getting along. Like at the mall is where I watch people, because sometimes I go to wander around the mall like in the winter because it's warm in there, and if I just need like space or something like that, like I've been at work, going to the mall is like a weird idea of space, right? Because there's people shopping and stuff like that, but you don't have to talk to anyone, which is nice.
No, but no one's going to look at you twice.
No, like you could sit down and people could think you're waiting for someone in a store, or mm-hmm. you know, nobody asks you questions, which I've enjoyed to watch people that way. And you're right, like I look at, you know, my grandparents, and I've also like met random old folks, and I say that like elderly citizens, I don't know how you call them, but like I've met them as I like have traveled and done things, and they have good relationships because they put in that work and that time, and they probably like you said, they found a I don't know, a method or like a formula that works for them, and they capitalized on that, because like there are some things that like that couples can do that can really just keep them going, right? That right. like really like that's what makes and does it, like it's a combination of it and moving forward, and I love that. And yeah, social media, an awesome thing, but also a huge plague. I've had friends in the same situation where they look at everyone and say, but they're happy and I'm not, and why are we not happy, what are we not doing? But if we fake being happy, then people will think that we're happy, and then we'll be happier, right? And it's not a successful like formula for sure.
No, it's comparing yourself against someone else, and that's too dangerous, because then you start playing what I call the what if game. And the what if game is always thinking about, you're more worried about the possible outcomes of the situation than mm-hmm. what you can do to affect the situation, right? Yeah. You know, it's worrying more about the future than worrying about when you actually have power, which is right now. Because right now you have the power to choose. You know, I could choose to go take a nap right now, you know. but will that be beneficial for me? Probably not, because it's almost bedtime. You know, yeah. But you have power to act now, but you don't have power to act in the future.
Yeah.
Right? And so people start playing the what if game because they're like, oh, well, everyone else has this stuff, but, you know, what if I try to like be like them, but I can't? Or what if I never get that stuff? What if I don't become what I see as successful, you know, air quotation successful. Mm-hmm. So I think the big thing is to take a minute, some time to think, and just understand yourself. Like, who am I? And is it okay to be me? And most of the time, it's yes. If you're a crack addict, it's okay to be you if you get your problem fixed. You know? Like, go get some therapy.
Yeah.
Another thing, therapy is okay. Yeah. Don't be afraid to go to therapy.
It's great, right? Thing.
But yeah, so for me, a lot of it's been to be okay just being me, you mm-hmm. know? And to think about your good things as well as understand that there are bad things, you know, that you need to work on.
Yeah.
But it's just part of being human. It's okay not to be perfect and to have stuff and to be rich. You know, it's okay to just be you.
Yeah.
And to work with what you have.
Well, I think that right there that you touched on in the end, it's okay to be me. I get concerned about a lot of people, right? Like I have friends and I see people and they're chasing this idea and this thing that we've been sold on is like, this is success. This is how you know you've made it. And this is happiness, right? And I don't necessarily believe that success is the same for everyone, right? But also happiness is very different for everyone. Because like for me, like I love to go hiking, and I love to go hiking for ridiculous amounts of time. And it's like stupid how much I like to go hiking. Like if I could just hike for work, I would do that. I would like build a mobile computer desk and have wireless internet in the forest. I would happily do that just to be outside. But what I think like is really cool that you said is it's okay to be me. It's okay to like understand that like for me, I'm going into this a little bit, but personally, the way I see it is it's okay to be a little weird sometimes. It's okay to like have those moments where people don't understand you, because it opens up a door for someone to try and communicate with you and get to know you better. But also, if someone doesn't understand you, it opens up a door for you to communicate and explain, oh yeah, this is why I'm a little bit different. This is why I look at it a certain way. And, you know, it's just a good option. So I think you've hit the nail on the head right there with the way people should look at life.
Yeah.
And
I think it's important to also remember, it's good to be you, because you have tools. If you know who you are, you have tools. Mm-hmm. But don't settle, you know?
Yeah.
Don't just be like, oh, well, I guess I'm just me, so I'm going to sit on the couch and just be me because that makes me happy, right?
Yeah.
If sitting on the couch makes you happy, that's great. But don't settle for just not doing anything, you know?
Yeah.
You try to progress in some way. While you're sitting on the couch, learn how to speak another language or something. You know, you can do something while you're sitting on the
couch. I've got Duolingo on my phone for that purpose.
Oh, yeah. So, I don't know.
No.
So, it's good to be okay with who you are, but also understand that who you are gives you tools to become something better.
Yeah. I totally agree with you, and especially with as easy as everything is now, like, at your fingertips, like, you can have a laptop, you can have a tablet, you can build, like, a business off your phone and never actually touch any inventory, right? So, right. There's, like, so many options that you can do, and if, for instance, you're, like, one of my weird features that I'm great at is I can make stick figure drawings on, like, Illustrator, and I can, you know, mount them and make little cartoons and put them on YouTube. You can do whatever you want. Like, if you're creative or if, you know, you have ideas, like, put it into words, write a book, you know, like, be, you know, be doing something.
Yeah.
Like I talked something about, I can't sit still. So, like, you know, do something, like, shake, like, get up and do yoga, like, a little bit in the middle of your couch time. Like, no, I love that. And
I also want to say, it's important to remember too, that if you are not making a living because you love drawing stick figures, like,
yeah,
it's okay to also have a job to fund your other stuff that you love to do.
Yeah.
Like, I really like my job that I do now, but that's not, like, the be-all, end-all for me. Like, I don't get, like, tons and tons of joy from, you know, working on my computer and doing stuff.
Yeah.
I use that as a tool to get to other stuff. So it's okay to just have a job, you know. And I think a lot of people think, oh, well, you know, do what you love, like, because I love being an artist, but you're really not that great at being an artist.
Yeah.
You're improving, but you're not that great. Like, it's okay to have a job and fund that.
Yeah, well, you should always have, like, a stepping stone, like, what's the next step? And sometimes, right. Like, right, you have to have that handrail as you're going up the stairs, and that could be, like, I have a job, it's, like you said, not the be-all, end-all, but it's providing me some form of stability or support as I progress in my skills and random, you know, random hobbies that I enjoy,
yeah,
that may or may not make me money, right?
As I work towards something else that could possibly be another job.
Yeah.
Like, it was something that I love, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if you could probably find a way to make money hiking.
I know I could do it. I just don't know. I don't know. It's like out there. It's like one day maybe, but no, for right now, you know, I'm trying, like, to figure it out, and it's just okay.
Yeah.
It's
and,
like
one day. And while you're doing that, you have another job, and yep, that's okay.
Yep.
And that's okay. So I think it's hard because I get so caught up in with what I think I should be versus what I define as success,
mm-hmm,
you know, because I start comparing myself to others, like, oh, I see, you know, maybe this big CEO. For me, it's someone that's in a position of great power that I feel like, oh man, like, I would really like to be like that.
Yeah,
a lot of the times that's comparing it to what they have or to, I don't know, what the perks that they get with it, but not necessarily like, oh, am I actually, like, trying to work towards that? Do I really want to be that?
Yeah.
And is that who I am? You know, am I a kind of person that could fit that kind of role?
Yeah. Well, you always have those, like, aspirational goals. I don't know if you've ever, like, made a dream board before. Or,
yeah.
Like, so I have a dream board, and it's like, the funniest thing to me. And, like, I made one because my friend challenged me to make one. Shout out to John Kovach. He's helped me out a lot. And it's actually helped me, like, find a little bit of direction, because it's, like, I chose things that I knew were attainable, but they were a stretch for me. So it's not like I could just, like, be like, oh, yeah, tomorrow I'm going to go buy this house, or I'm going to, you know, do this event. I'm going to take 2 years and travel the world. Like, I can't just do that tomorrow because I haven't set up the, I don't know, the pathway to get there currently.
Right.
And so same type of thing. Like, I want to be a business owner. I want to do things like that. And so it's just one step at a time, right, until you get there and you can find success. And success is measured very differently for everyone. And
yeah.
You can't tell someone, though, if, for instance, they're like, hey, my goal was to do this, and I made it, and I'm going to be here for 20 years, and I'm happy about it. You're like, if that's what you wanted, and that's success for you, like, two thumbs way up, buddy.
You made it.
Like, you made it. And obviously, like, there's that might be just one step of their success that they're openly sharing, right, with us, because there's other things everyone's always pursuing behind the scenes.
Right.
So.
I agree. Yeah, defining your success, that's actually something, a big lesson that I've had to learn recently. So that's it's given me a lot of direction. That's why I thought about why my purpose is making connections with people. Because if I can get in a position where my job is helping connect people to what they need, and having me connect to other people, that is my success.
Yeah. And that moves you forward. Well, I feel like we've went full circle now, and I feel like we've kind of come to a spot where, like, we can conclude, but I want to ask you, like, one more question. As someone who essentially is, you know, stepping out now, like, you're moving into, like a professional career for a minute, you're moving on to an MBA, like, what is something you would say to someone who's, like, wants to understand the process better of moving forward and just getting to where you're going, like, in that idea? Like, how does somebody work a full-time job, be a dad, go to school, because you're going to school as well, like, to be get your MBA, right? So you're doing, like, how do you juggle those hats, and what's the process that you would recommend to people? Like, how would you tell them to go forward?
I would say that life is a lot like being on an airplane, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a destination, you know, your goal to do, but you have a lot going on. Like you were saying, I'm also a father, but I also need to exercise. I need to eat healthy. I need to,
yeah,
you know, show up to work and do a good job. I need to progress in my job. I need to do a lot of things. Yeah. And that can be really overwhelming. And I also volunteer for my church. I do a lot of things.
Yeah.
But it's like an airplane, because you're never going to be perfectly balanced. You'll always be leaning towards one way or towards another way. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you have to say, all right, you know, church service, I need to put you off for a minute, mm-hmm, because my family needs me, right? Yeah. Or family, I know I love you and everything, but I need to go to work, right?
Yeah.
And so maybe you need to, because you're doing a couple extra trainings for this short period of time, you'll spend a little extra time at work, uh-huh, to make it better for your family in the future, right? So it's a lot like being on an airplane, where sometimes you have to turn and bank and deal with a little bit of turbulence. And so you're never really at equilibrium. Mm-hmm. And that's an important thing to remember. And the other thing I would say is, view your hours like money. You got to budget it. Everyone has the same 168 hours in a week.
Yeah.
And, you really ought to keep track of that and budget it and say, this is what I have been doing. So you know where you're at, and then you say, this is what I want to be doing, and so then you can plan accordingly.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I appreciate it, and thanks for your time, Dan. And thank you so much. Listen to this podcast, let us know what you think, and thanks so much for tuning in to the What's Your Take podcast. Dan, thank you.
Thank you.